essence. Yes, of course. I bet there is one key missing, said Groats. The watch took it. It was the only one. Some doors ought to stay closed, sir. It's all over and done with, sir. Mr. Wobbleberry died of an industrial accident, they said. Nobody near him. You don't want to go there, sir. Sometimes things get so broke it's best to walk away, sir.
I can't, said Moist. I am the Postmaster General. And this is my building, isn't it? I'll decide when I go, Junior Postman Groat.
Stanley shut his eyes. Yes, sir, said Groat, as if talking to a child. But you don't want to go there, sir.
His head was all over the wall, Stanley quavered.
Oh, dear, now you set him off, sir, said Groat, scuttling across to the boy. It's all right, lad, I'll just get you your pills.
What is the most expensive pin ever made commercially, Stanley? Said Moist quickly. It was like pulling a lever. Stanley's expression went from agonised grief to scholarly cogitation in an instant.
Commercially, leaving aside those special pins made for exhibitions and trade shows, including the great pin of 1899, then probably it is the number 3 broad-headed chicken extra long made for the lace-making market by the noted pinner Josiah Doldrum, I would say. They were hand-drawn and had his trademark, silver head, with a microscopic engraving of a cockerel. It's believed that fewer than 100 were made before his death, sir. According to Hubert Spider's pin catalogue, examples can fetch between $50 and $65, depending on condition. A number 3 broad-headed extra long would grace any true pinhead's collection.
Only I spotted this in the street, said Moist, extracting one of that morning's purchases from his lapel. I was walking down Market Street, and there it was, between two cobblestones. I thought it looked unusual for a pin. Stanley pushed away the fussing Groat and carefully took the pin from Moist's fingers. A very large magnifying glass appeared as if by magic in his other hand. The room held its breath as the pin was subjected to serious scrutiny. Then Stanley looked up at Moist in amazement.
"You knew," he said, "and you spotted this in the street. I thought you didn't know anything about pins."
"Oh, not really, but I dabbled a bit as a boy," said Moist, waving a hand deprecatingly to suggest that he had been too foolish to turn a schoolboy hobby into a lifetime's obsession. "You know, a few of the old brass imperials, one or two oddities like an unbroken pair or a double header, the occasional cheap packet of mixed pins on approval. Thank the gods," he thought, "for the skill of speed-reading."
"Oh, there's never anything worthwhile in those," said Stanley, and slid again into the voice of the academic. "While most pinheads do indeed begin with a casually acquired flashy novelty pin, followed by the contents of their grandmother's pin cushions, the path to a truly worthwhile collection lies not in the simple disbursement of money in the nearest pin emporium. Oh, no. Any dilettante can become King Pin with enough expenditure. But for the true pinhead, the real pleasure is in the joy of the chase, the pin fairs, the house clearances, and, who knows, a casual glint in the gutter that turns out to be a well-preserved double fast or an unbroken two-pointer. Well, is it said, see a pin and pick it up, and all day long you'll have a pin.
Moist nearly applauded. It was word for word what J. Lanugo Owlsbury had written in the introduction to his work. And much more important, he now had an unshakable friend in Stanley. That was to say, his darker regions added, Stanley was friends with him. The boy, his panic subsumed by the joy of pins, was holding his new acquisition up to the light.
Magnificent, he breathed, all terrors fled. Clean as a new pin. I have a place ready and waiting for this in my pin folder, sir.
Yes, I thought you might. His head was all over the wall. Somewhere there was a locked door and Moist didn't have the key. 4 of his predecessors had predeceased in this very building, and there was no escape. Being Postmaster General was a job for life, one way or the other. That was why Vetinari had put him here. He needed a man who couldn't walk away, and who was incidentally completely expendable. It didn't matter if Moist von Lipwig died, he was already dead. And then he tried not to think about Mr. Pump. How many other golems had worked their way to freedom in the service of the city? Had there been a Mr. Saw, fresh from 100 years in a pit of sawdust? Or Mr. Shovel? Mr. Axe, maybe? And had there been one here when the last poor guy had found the key to the locked door, or a good lockpick, and was about to open it when behind him someone called maybe Mr. Hammer, yes, oh gods, yes, raised his fist for one sudden terminal blow? No one had been near him, but they weren't people, were they? They were tools. It'd be an industrial accident. His head was all over the wall. I'm going to find out about this. I have